Good morning, everybody. Thank you very much for having me here today. What I want to do is talk to you about a little bit of work that we've started doing at Washington University. And this work is actually my first foray into the area of genomics and genetic research. My work is largely centered in public health education and training research. But I've got a colleague that does a lot of work in our community settings in St. Louis. And together we sort of decided to, I'll explain why in a minute, but together we decided to start collecting some pilot data looking at African Americans' perspectives on genetics as part of their healthcare as well as genetic research. And so I have no financial relationships to disclose. What I wanted to do is give you a little bit of background about what motivated us to start looking at this and collecting this pilot data, and then talk to you a little bit about the survey data that we collected and some of the things that we found that we're now making plans to explore on a larger level. And so at Washington University, we have we don't have a school of public health, but we have an institute for public health. And this institute serves to try to unite public health across the campuses and bring together individuals who are working in different areas related to public health. And the institute also not sets priorities for public health work at WashU, but kind of recognizes areas where there's either a need for research or an interest on the part of multiple individuals across the university. And one of the things that the institute started talking about in its earlier days, it was formed about 2.5 years ago, and one of the things that they started talking about was, well, Washington University has this great resource in our genetics research. We have great basic science in that area, and we have a lot of people that are trying to do biobanking and sort of more translational type of genetic research, but we're having a lot of trouble recruiting racial and ethnic minorities to those biobanks, and so we really want to try to bring genetics into the community and try to bring the community into our research, and this is a fantastic idea. And so several people started questioning, well, what does the community really think? Does the community think it's a fantastic idea? Just because the university thinks that doesn't mean that it's going to work. And so we started thinking about trying to get a feel for what the community's perceptions, and sort of receptivity to all of this really was. So then we started doing some looking at kind of, well, what's known and what's going on right now in the field. And just in general, there's been in recent years sort of increasing public exposure to the use of genetics in healthcare. And so we tend to think about testing high-risk individuals to see, you know, looking at women who have strong family histories of breast cancer and testing them for BRCA. Testing individuals who are of advanced maternal age to look for potential genetic abnormalities or genetic issues with the child or children that they're carrying. We've also seen sort of this onslaught of commercial genetic tests. And while they started, when they first made their way onto the market and were very expensive, the cost of those have come down, making them more accessible to individuals that originally didn't have access to that. And there's obviously a lot of debate about whether those things should be used. Some states do not, they're actually not endorsed or legal in certain states. But you know, the bottom line is that the public's being exposed to genetics within their healthcare much more so now than they were a decade or two ago. And as I mentioned, there's just been this growing focus on biobanking and genetic research and trying to gather biospecimens. I was actually talking to someone from NCI yesterday, and they were talking about how this is becoming a priority for NCI, looking at biospecimen collection and biobanking and really trying to figure out ways to increase the diversity of the individuals that become part of these endeavors. And in another thing that we've started to see with some of the work that's happened at WashU and other places is that the informed consent process has started getting very complicated for this type of work, especially when we talk about, we want to save your specimen for future studies. And what exactly we could do in the future, we don't even know. We have no idea where technology could be taking us. And how do we convey that to individuals? And we're supposed to fully disclose what we could be doing with their specimens down the line. And how are we going to protect genetic information that, or protect things that we don't even exactly know what we might be assessing? So kind of thinking about all of this led us to, as I said, was one of the motivating factors for us to start collecting some of this preliminary data that I'll talk to you about in a few minutes. And so we started looking at, well, what do people really think? What do people know there's sort of two issues. And what's people's baseline knowledge about genetics and the use of genetics in their own healthcare and genetic research, and how receptive are they to this? And so what we started finding is that a lot of the work really seems to focus on individuals who are, and I put this in quotes, sick, but individuals who have a particular illness, or even particular people that are at high risk for something. So they've got a family history of something, and so there have been studies done looking at, well, what's their knowledge about the potential role of genetics in this and that type of thing. And so a lot of work in healthy individuals has focused more on Caucasian populations. There have been much smaller numbers of the racial and ethnic minorities in this. But the healthy individuals are really key, because in order to move our research forward, you need to have sort of that healthy comparison group to be able to, like I said, really move our research forward and whatnot. So understanding healthy individuals who might not necessarily have a motivation to participate in research, kind of what's their thought on all of this, as well as what's their thought on this piece of knowledge about, their health care. And so we really just kind of felt that there was not enough evidence to really get a feel for what racial and ethnic minorities take on all of this really was. And in St. Louis, we live in an area where actually within the city, our majority population is African American. We're about 52% African American. So we've got a very high population with which we could sort of tap into and start to try to understand maybe what these individuals are thinking or feeling, and what their take is on all of this. And so we decided to collect some pilot data, and these data they're from a small number of individuals, but they were really gathered to start seeing whether this would be something worth looking at on a larger level. And so we had three kind of specific goals with this pilot data. We wanted to get in a couple of questions to look at African American adults' receptivity to using genomics as part of their own healthcare. Sort of, is this something they'd want to see as part of their routine care? Are these conversations they would want to have with their providers? And then what's their likelihood of participating in genetic-related research? And sort of what's their perception about genetic risk? What does that mean to them, and what does it potentially mean for their future? And so what we did was we tacked on a bunch of questions to a parent study that was going on. So my colleague, Amy James, who actually holds ACS funding that the parent study was part of, Amy was in the process of conducting a 12-month longitudinal study on colon cancer screening. And she was doing this study within individuals who were patients at federally qualified health centers within the city of St. Louis. And recruitment for that study took place over about a course of a year. And it was they gave three surveys, a baseline, a 6-month, and a 12-month survey to these individuals. And in order to be in the study, these individuals had to be 40 years or older, and they had to be English speaking. And they had to be a patient at one of the FQHCs that we were recruiting at. And so what we did was we tacked on to this study, to the 12-month survey, a series of questions about genetic research and use of genetics in healthcare. And so we were very limited in what we could ask these individuals, because the 12-month survey had to contain a lot of information following up on the baseline and the 6-month survey, all related to colon cancer. And so we tacked on about 10 questions to the end of the survey asking about genetics. And the survey was done by telephone. The follow-up was done by telephone. So all participants it was a telephone interviewer survey. And so the questions that we asked they weren't enough for us to get in-depth information on anything, but enough for us to start to get a feel for maybe whether there were any general trends or areas we'd want to explore further. So we asked a couple questions about discussions, communications with our healthcare providers, and sort of just that desire for information. As well as their attitudes towards genetic research. And so we did this cross-sectional analysis of this data that were collected at the 12-month time point. And so just to give you an idea about the population, in order to be in the parent study, there was no racial or ethnic inclusion-exclusion criteria, but we just restricted the cross-sectional analysis to the African-American, those that self-identified as African-American, which was 63 individuals. And so the average age of this population was older. They were about 52 years old. And that's partially because the inclusion criteria for the parent study was that they had to be 40 and up. So we were already getting an older population's take on this. But we had a nice split between male and female. We actually had a pretty close to a 50-50 split, 32 men and 31 women that we wound up looking at, which was nice because it allowed us to look at some gender comparisons. But overall, the population, as expected, was very low income. They were a very transient population. They were all patients at the federally qualified health center. So that was, it was not unexpected for us to find a large number of uninsured, unemployed, low income, that type of thing. So again, a population that some people at least had perceptions this might not be of importance to them, you know, that they're, this population is concerned about things other than genetics. And so, you know, to us it made it a little more interesting even to look at what was going on. So one of the interesting things that we found out was that a very, very low number of individuals had actually talked with a provider about genetic risk, what that meant, what their genetic risk for something was, but that a huge number, you know, about three quarters of the overall population that we talked with actually wanted to have those conversations. So we asked them if they would be interested in having discussions with a healthcare provider about these things. And an overwhelming number said yes, that interest was there. A fair number were actually interested in having a blood test. We asked them, you know, we didn't get too technical in these questions. Like I said, we had limited time. But we asked them if they'd be interested in having a blood test done to look at their genetics. And again, the women were a little more interested than men because numbers are small. There are no significant differences here. But again, a large interest in talking about these things and having these things done. We also asked them some questions that got us a little concerned with the answers. We asked them if they thought if they had genetic risk for something, did it mean that nothing could be done to stop them from getting the disease or reduce their chances of getting their disease? And so obviously this can differ depending on the disease you're talking about, but about a third of them said, well, hey, if I have a genetic risk, nothing can be done. Like, pretty much that's it. And that kind of got us worried because just thinking about, you know, healthy behaviors and prevention in general, you know, there's lots of reasons to practice that, and the fact that they thought, well, if they were determined to have a genetic risk for something, that, that meant there was nothing that could be done, that could have negative impacts for other aspects of their health as well. Yeah, we're back. Another thing that was of great concern is about 20% of participants thought, if I was told I didn't have a genetic risk for something, it means that I don't need to be screened. And that was a big concern for us because, again, disease is multifactorial, and just because you don't have a genetic risk doesn't mean that you can ignore the fact that one day you could develop heart disease or you could develop breast cancer. And so that idea that they were thinking that this was a little bit more black and white than reality. And, the screen up here is flickering too.
Is it up there?
Well, yeah. A large number also.
She just wants to go get.
Yeah, she just.
It's mega dramatic, but black.
Right, there you go. well, I'll keep going until we either lose again or IT gets here. A large number also felt that if they had a family history, that that automatically meant they had a genetic risk for disease, that they didn't need any testing done, that the family history was enough to tell them that they had an increased risk based on a genetic reason. So we found some issues that were raising some concerns for us and some avenues for further exploration. You know, we, like I said, these were limited questions that we were asking, and so we didn't get a chance to really explore. We didn't define a lot of these terms. We left them up to people to kind of get their initial reaction, because with the idea of hearing, well, if a provider sat down with them and said, I want to talk to you about genetic risk, and didn't go any further than that, what would their reaction be? Or if they were recruited into a study that said, we want to take some samples of your blood or your cheek cells or a skin sample, and we're going to use this for genetic research, and didn't really go any further than seeing that initial recruitment piece, what would their reaction be? So it gave us some avenues that we want to look at in greater detail. Another thing that we did, though, find is that
people were really not opposed to participating in research if it was going to involve genetics. That, you know, we asked them, would they be less likely to participate in a research study if it involved a genetic aspect to it? And really only about a quarter, slightly more than that, of our population said, yeah, that would make me less likely. So a lot of people were not turned off immediately to the idea of research that involved genetics. And similarly, only about a third of people said, well, if they want to use my blood, then I don't want to be involved. Or if they want to keep some of my blood, we didn't ask them about other types of specimens, but we said, you know, if researchers wanted to keep some of your blood and bank that for future studies where it wasn't defined what they were going to do with it, would that make you less likely to participate? And only about 30% of people overall had indicated that. So we found that there wasn't, in this population, there wasn't great opposition to participation in genetic research. And so that also was promising to us. But then we started thinking, well, how are we, if there's not a huge overwhelming feeling of people that participation in genetic research is unlikely for them, then why are our numbers low? So it gives us, again, some places to start looking as to why individuals at our institution, at least, who have been trying to create some of these banks, are not getting the type of racial and ethnic diversity in there that they would like to be seeing. And so what we...
I'm just going to go grab you something to run straight to the projector, okay?
Okay.
We could use this temporarily. Sorry.
Do you want to take a few questions now, or do you want to just keep going?
Well, this is pretty much the last slide, so I can do that, and then I can take a couple questions. So, I mean, really what we walked away with from this was that the African-American adults that we surveyed had this interest in having discussions with their healthcare providers about genetics and about how that could possibly be a part of their healthcare. But we also walked away with some concern about people's perceptions about what genetic risk meant and how that would impact their health behaviors, sort of their general take on their healthcare and practices. And so what we've actually done is we've designed a larger survey study to explore some of these issues in more detail. And our interest is right now maintaining a focus on the African American population and looking to see whether there are differences in the way men and women respond to some of these issues. We saw some trends here in several of these questions that indicated there may be differences, but because our numbers were so small, we weren't powered to detect anything significant. And so we've designed a larger survey study to start looking at this and to try to see if there are any gender differences within this particular within the African-American population that we'd be looking at. And we also are looking at doing more of a community-based sample. This study was done in FQHC patients, so they were there obviously for a reason. And so whether that had any impact on the way that they were thinking about these questions and responding to these questions
is a potential. And so we're looking at a more of a community-based sampling strategy for the larger survey that we're planning on doing. So we've actually submitted that and got a score that looks like it's fundable. We will find out shortly. But if so, we'll be able to start exploring some of these issues in a little more detail and then thinking about moving forward. And if we are finding male-female differences in the way these things are thought about or perceived in any of these attitudes or knowledge, then that is going to impact the way we would then design some interventions to either look at changing sort of our recruitment strategies for research studies or looking at patient-provider communication issues. And if we don't find anything significant on male-female differences, that is also going to be very important to us. And then we'd also look to expand this in, you know, comparison to other racial and ethnic groups. So those are kind of our plans for the future. So I can't see anything on this computer, but obviously you guys can see again. So I wanted to acknowledge the rest of the research team on this. Like I said, Amy James is the PI on the parent study, the ACS grant that she was kind enough to work with me to tack on these genetics questions too, and then our two other co-authors on the paper, as well as all of our study participants and our funders. So happy to take any questions.
great talk. We actually had a graduate student at Howard University do a similar study, and we found out that, you know, they do want to participate. I mean, if you all know about Howard University, we're historically black college and university. And so most of the folks that are seen there at the hospital are either African American or Hispanic. And we are finding that they do want to be involved in research and in genetic studies specifically, and that the gap may be in receiving information. They wish that they knew how to be involved in studies, so we've reached out to community organizations, but also that the doctors, the primary care physician, can also play a role in helping recruit patients into studies. But with genetic studies specifically, there seems to be some apprehension on the physician side because they lack some of the knowledge needed to be able to give good information about genetic studies or the right information about genetic studies.
So I think that's interesting about the physician piece of it, because one of the things that we've found, I've done other studies within our survey studies within this population on other topics, and just in general, we've kind of gotten this feeling from providers, and we haven't studied this in any way, so it's just kind of anecdotal, but we've gotten this feeling from providers that well, this is sensitive, and I don't really want to talk about this with these, you know, with individuals. And I'm talking to individuals who this might be a sensitive topic for them, and so I'm just not going to bring it up, or I'm going to shy away from it. And so on the part of the provider, that anecdotal hesitation is something we've noticed through some other studies. So that could also be something interesting to explore a little bit more.
So I had a comment about the numbers you were looking at. Mm-hmm. I think you said 30%, you were concerned about the 30% of those responded to that they had an opinion about the genetics, and having a genetic risk factor meant that nothing could be done. Have you looked at the control population to see if that's specific to just your African-American population?
No, so this was all pilot data, and so looking at these issues but on a broader picture is part of the study that we had just reviewed.
Okay.
So that's something that we'll be able to explore further.
Yeah,
and see.
It's interesting to see if maybe the rest of the American population
feels the same way. Exactly, which maybe is the reason they don't want to go talk to the genetic counselors, because they're like, well, nothing can be done. Why should I go talk to anybody about this? So, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, the figure got for the acceptability of taking blood in your African-American population, do you feel that's generalizable? For example, I'm about 45 minutes drive from inner city Detroit,
mm-hmm.
And it's hard to say what the reaction to that kind of question would be. What's your feeling about generalizability?
So again, very limited right now because of the way that the sample was drawn from, and hopefully at least if we're able to carry out this larger study, we'll hopefully have better generalizability within even just within the African American community in St. Louis itself. I mean, right now this was a very select group, and I don't even think we can say that this is representative of how the community within St. Louis feels, let alone anything beyond that. But I think we were really just taking it as a place to start. So
let's move on, and I think we should have a little bit of